Hi, everybody. Welcome to What's Next, a West Wing podcast. This is episode four, 5 votes down. This is Joseph Amato here. Sitting across from me is my good buddy, Anthony Caputo. How are you, buddy?
Doing good. How you doing, Joe?
Very good. You enjoy the episode?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Listen, I want to throw... Oh, yeah. Sound like the... Was it the high C guy? Yeah. No, the
Kool-Aid guy.
The Kool-Aid guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Don't break my walls, please. You got to assume that, like, what if he was like a handyman? You know what I mean? Like, he's just creating his own work for him, for himself. Right. You can sue that guy.
It's a great business model.
It is a great business model. So 5 votes down. Wow. So much happened in this episode. I don't know where to begin. Where do you want to start?
You know, the thing that captured me the most... Like, it was a great episode. There's so many things happened. But let's start with Leo, in my opinion. His whole relationship issues.
He's kind of the driver of this episode, even if it doesn't seem like that in the beginning. You're right.
Right. I don't know. Like, where do you want to start with Leo, though? There's so many things. You want to just start, like, from that first scene with the gift?
Well, I guess... All right, let's work backwards a little bit. I think one of the themes of the episode, overriding, and you know, we could touch on this on a few characters, is hubris. I mean, I think it's literally mentioned 2 or 3 times. So if you work backwards, you can see Leo's own hubris. I would even say stubbornness kind of drive a lot of things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, so with that as the overlay, let's get into like the nitty grittier parts. Are you talking about the scene with his wife, the first time that we meet his wife?
Let's just take it back. Since we're talking about hubris,
hubris.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, hubris.
Hubris.
I like saying hubris.
I love saying hubris. Yes, that hubris. Was Othello's biggest downfall as well.
I'm sure there were many people who suffered from hubris. I'm enjoying this word too much. All right, go ahead.
Because personally, I've been told, and I've come to agree in some senses, that hubris is my biggest flaw. And it's gotten
I've already told you what your biggest flaw is.
Well, what's that?
It's your own, like, naivete, I think.
Right. Well, I mean, so that's your take. But I think that, you know, through the years, I've been told also that hubris is a big thing.
I don't think they're not disconnected, by the way, though.
Mm.
Because if you were a little bit less naive, you might not be so hubris. That's not... How do I use that word? How do I conjugate that word?
I don't know.
Hubric? Hubrative?
Hubertive. Hubertive. Let's just call it
that's
that.
What it's going to be now.
All right. Correct us if we're wrong. Send us an email.
Yeah, please do. So you would be less hubertive if you weren't so naive.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't mean you specifically. Now I'm talking generally speaking. Yeah. I think they're connected. Because that's like a real... I'd be like, thanks, Dick.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean you, but yeah.
I don't know. I've definitely felt like being that hubris can cause a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And I think it stems because I think a lot of the time the person who possesses the hubris is blind to it. Like, you don't know.
Of course. Yeah.
Right.
Otherwise, you would self-correct.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But I think that when someone brings it to your attention, it's easier to correct.
It is, but then you run into whether or not you're securing yourself enough to admit that you're wrong and whether or not you're able to have that ability to perceive. I mean, you look at Leo. Leo's too stubborn, you know? He's being told that he has to go to Tillinghouse.
Right.
I'm sorry. Hey, he has to go to the vice president to get Tillinghouse.
Yeah.
There's no other way to get the fifth vote back. And he just refuses to do it. Mm. He's being told by everyone. This isn't one person. Everyone is telling him that he has to do it, and he just won't.
Right.
So sometimes it doesn't even work that way.
Right.
And you could also say that it ultimately is the thing that cost him his marriage. Now, maybe they were on that track, he and Jenny, Leo and Jenny. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that they were, while she was definitely there, as they said, for the decision part, that this is what they were going to do, that maybe she didn't realize what it fully entailed. which happens to all of us. You have to have been in that. I know I have been in that situation where you think you are saying, like you think you've prepared yourself. You're like, okay, I know what this is going to be. And then when you're in it, you're like, oh, I didn't know it was going to really be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Has that happened to you?
It has. It has. Wait, just like, even just like with simple conversations. Like,
what do you mean?
I've tried to prepare myself for certain situations or conversations that I had to have with people at some
point. Oh, right.
And I'm like, all right, I'm ready for this. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to say X, Y, and Z.
Right.
This is going to be the outcome.
Right.
Like, well, and I get there and something happens so unexpected that I'm not prepared for.
Right.
And it's just like, what?
Yeah.
What just happened?
And you think that you're going to, you know, like you think you know and all of a sudden it's not the way it is.
Right.
And such is the case for Jenny. Where, yeah, I mean, they made this decision to be a part of this. And then ultimately, you know, but think about it. Okay. If Leo goes to Hoynes right away, you know what happens? He doesn't have to run out on his wife during dinner.
Right.
Right. So he misses. He forgets that that it's their anniversary. Okay.
Right.
That's on him. She says to him in that scene where she leaves him, she says, you make the time with everybody else. And he says, I made the time tonight. And she says, no, you didn't. Margaret called. And he's like, I was going to step out quickly for 45 minutes.
That's a quick
45 what? Minutes? What do you expect her? But okay, that aside, that whole thing could be not even an issue if he was just not so stubborn, not so full of hubris. And he just went to Hoynes right away.
Right.
Everything is his own undoing. You look at it how he has to end up, you know, if he was just willing to go right away, he wouldn't have gone to the Black Caucus and make a fool of himself there.
Right.
He wouldn't have given Hoynes the perfect opportunity. He brings himself down in that way, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, it is. The downfall of a man.
It is.
Because of his own hubris.
It is. Because of his own. I mean, it's not quite Othello, but, you know.
Yeah.
And the breakup, oh, it's so bad. Call me before you go to bed.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about that now?
I said that. I yeah, said that
I,
to a girl.
I've said that many
One
times.
One ex. I don't remember. We talked about exes before, and I named them Yolanda and something else.
Yolanda and, yeah, Michelle?
No, I would never use Michelle.
Okay, Yolanda.
All right, it doesn't matter, but I've used it with an ex. Have you? Okay, I've been in that situation too before.
All right, which situation?
I've been in the situation
like
where
an important event, like a birthday or an anniversary.
I've been in it. I don't think I have. No, I don't think I have. But I have been in the situation where you break up with someone, and it's not screaming, and you hate each other.
Right.
It's just like we have reached the end of this road, and it's. You know, it is what it is, and it's just fucking awful. Have you been there?
Yeah, many times.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't been there many times. Only a couple. You've been there many?
Most of my relationships... Well, let me say, so for the first question, I'm usually good with birthdays and anniversaries. I'm usually good to remember dates.
All right.
And in terms of like...
When's my birthday?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, all right.
We're not dating,
you
Joe.
Just looked in the calendar and saw my birthday.
Joe
was.
Has this adorable family calendar
okay.
that he has.
All right.
Each like his family puts it together and everyone's birthday on their date has a picture of their face. And I just thought it was so
okay,
cool.
Okay. Yes, my family, I come from an Italian family that is very, very close, all 40 of us, and we do things like that. So yes. So wait, so go ahead. You remember birthdays except mine and what else?
And important dates, like if I'm in a relationship, so I'm usually not the one to forget.
I would technically say that we are in a relationship, but okay, continue, please.
I'll even go so far as to say I over-dramatize these events too.
Whereas, that comes as no surprise to me.
Whereas somebody in the relationship might say, "Oh, it's not a big thing." I tend to value those things and like blow them out of proportion sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
But that's just me.
Totally see that you would do that. But hold on. So you've been in. You've broken up with someone where it was, or you both have broken up together, and it was like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
And it was just...
You know, most of my breakups haven't been like screaming matches or yelling or arguing. Most of my breakups have been like, I guess we're going our separate ways.
Really?
Yeah, and like just emotional just emotion, like heavy emotional goodbyes. That's what they've usually been.
Wow.
And yeah, and it's, I kind of wish I could yell at someone at some point.
Let me tell you something. It's probably better because one of the worst breakups I ever had is when I didn't even realize we broke up. Because it wasn't one of those where you're like screaming at one another. Like she was just like, listen, you know, the problems that we have aren't getting any better. I'm like, no, yeah, you're right. And all this other stuff.
So what do you
and I
tomorrow?
Can remember. Well, I literally remember we went to bed that night because we were living together. And the next day we were going somewhere and I was like holding her hand and all these other things. And I gave her a couple of kisses and blah, blah, blah. And that night she's like, why are you holding my hand? I'm like, why wouldn't I? I'm trying to be affectionate. She's like, we broke up yesterday. I'm like, is that what happened?
We just broke up.
I was like, I had no idea. Wait, that's what we just did?
That's horrible.
That's an honest to God story. That was Yolanda. I don't know if that was Yolanda, but that was one of them.
And in your defense too, and after watching the episode, I don't know if Leo actually is done
that's
with
right
his wife.
Again, for those that maybe are just joining us, Anthony has never seen a single episode. He has no idea what happens in the future. So if you don't know where this is going, yeah, I could totally see where it's like, okay, but maybe they could get back together.
Right.
All she did was move out. I don't
right
know. I'm
and
with
did
you
she even move out? She kind of just looks
like
she
suitcase
needs a, well, I mean, that's her whole life after a marriage with him for how many years? In a
I don't
suitcase?
Know.
Like, I feel like she just needs, like, a breather right
yeah
now. Because I've been in those situations, too, where...
Yes.
And I'm usually...
I actually haven't, I don't think. Wait, no, yes, I have. Never mind, sorry.
I usually don't like letting people go, either. I'm like, no, I want to solve this now. If we have an issue, don't walk out on me. You know, let's like, get through it.
I know, but then that brings up... That's interesting. That brings up a whole other thing, which is Leo is certainly not in the position to be able to do that because he's 5 votes down.
Right.
Which now brings us back to Leo, his storyline. And to me, something that has kind of gnawed at me for a few years after I saw this documentary on J.D. Salinger, is this job more important than his marriage?
Mm.
And I think it is. And the question that I've had, and I've asked friends of mine, and I've asked Anthony this before, in order to be great or to do great things, do you have to be selfish to the point of being what others might consider a dick and or you know, a bad person? And my answer is yes. Salinger would not have written the books that he wrote if he was a better father. You know, you look at all the brilliant minds from the past. Invariably, they are people that were not good family men.
Mm.
You know?
I can name Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein.
Edison was a son of a bitch, though. Edison was a son of a... He stole everything from Tesla. But Tesla was nuts. Mm. I mean, Einstein, absolutely. Jobs.
Right.
I mean, you can... down the line.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not calling Leo, you know... a genius or this or that, but yes, his job is more important than his marriage in order to do it well. It absolutely is.
And I don't want what Joe is saying, because I agree with him, to be misconstrued as a pass for men to be assholes.
Well, it's not
wives.
Just men. It can be women too.
Right.
I actually think it's harder for women because women, it's a double standard for women. A guy can abandon his family and it's, oh, he's just a jerk. A woman abandons her family and she's a monster.
Right.
That's a double standard in society.
Exactly.
So.
But yeah, I agree. And
so you
I,
do agree.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I think that. But then it begs the question of, well, one, did both of them know that what they were stepping into? And did they adequately prepare?
Well, that's what we talked about before. I don't know that when you're, when you can gear yourself up to think that things are going to be a certain way
until you're,
and then you're in it and you realize, wow, I've basically been abandoned by this man for, you know, the president or the government or the people. And that house can be very lonely.
Yeah.
It's a big house that he lives in.
Yeah. But
and that
no,
can
yeah
be a very lonely thing.
And I'm torn here too. I mean, so that begs that question. And before I say why I'm torn, the other question is, well, then why did you, if you knew that this was in your future, why even go down the path?
You didn't,
of
but you didn't know. You didn't know.
Right.
That's why it's, we're talking about making a mistake.
Right.
If you knew that it was the wrong thing, why'd you do it? Well, because you didn't know it was the wrong thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you have to, And I think this is actually a really good test for certain people. You know, you think about how certain people don't make it in this business or that business, and sometimes because they're not good enough, and sometimes because they didn't get a lucky break, or sometimes this and that. Sometimes it's because, you don't want to make the sacrifices. Right, your family is too important to you. Right. And you have to understand that. You know, I moved to LA for 2 years. It was the hardest 2 years of my life because, as you now know, I have a very close family that makes calendars of one another. And that wasn't easy. It was very hard. Mm. I don't know that I could move away for my entire life. I don't think I could do it. Mm. I don't know that I have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
And I think you have to have that ability.
I think, yeah. And I don't know. Like, it's tougher when you're married or when you're in
when you have kids. J.D. Yeah. Salinger's kids hate him.
Right.
But, I mean, we wouldn't have The Catcher in the Rye.
My favorite book.
Is it really?
Yeah, Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, there's a cost.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be Da Vinci and be right. a family man. Yeah, exactly. Like, you just can't.
But it's like, yeah, so with that in mind, like, I look at their relationship and I see what they're both going through. And I could see that they both regret what has been created. But at the same time, neither one of them are letting up. In terms of, Leo is still pursuing this five votes down.
He has to. And it's more important.
And his wife is still staying true to her feelings and say, you know, I know that what you're going through is a lot and it's heavy and we weren't able to anticipate this, but I can't do this to myself anymore.
Well, it's kind of like what you said, I think, in the last episode about accepting reality for what it is.
Mm.
And you can't escape certain truths. And this is a truth. You know?
Yeah, and so I don't know who's right. Because
I don't think there has to be a right.
But I could totally see myself in Leo and doing what he's doing. And I could totally empathize with his wife and feeling what she's feeling.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm really... When that episode, when he said, will you call me before you go to sleep? Like, I've said that line before. And I could see, like, you could see the emotion in both of their eyes.
It's tough.
It's like, wow.
In their eyes, you hear it in his voice. His right. voice goes like 2 octaves lower than it normally is
right.
because he can barely get the words. It's, he's such a good actor, that guy. And there's other things that I want to bring up with him in terms of his acting, but to stay on this point, yeah, I mean, it's a devastating moment. And it's about accepting. I don't think there is someone who's right. I don't think there's someone who's wrong. It's about, this is who they are. This is where they are. And you have to accept the truth for what it is.
And I don't think that neither one of them can blame each other for this outcome.
No, they fight and they try to put blame on one or the right. other. And then you realize...
At the end.
And this is like... And I think this is the track that they're on. Like, I don't think if he goes to Hoynes right away, that prevents them from breaking up ever. Okay?
Right.
But it is, just from a narrative standpoint, just from a dramatic standpoint, for an episode, for a story, it's written well. The fact that his own ability or inability to let go and swallow his own pride and go to the vice president, is the straw that ends up, it becomes the straw that breaks the camel's back with his mm-hmm. wife. And it all comes back to him. And then the theme of the episode, which is exemplified in Josh. And it's just, it's great. It's just so wonderfully done.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to assign any blame or fault, I guess you could do it there. But in terms of the nature of their relationship, no, I wouldn't.
And have you ever had to make a sacrifice like that for a relationship that inevitably ended it?
Yes. Well, yes and no. I you know, there was one girl that I was dating that she... You know, I was in my mid-20s and she was very much adamant that she didn't want to live here in New Jersey for she wanted to move away for the foreseeable future, you know. She wanted to move away. Family wasn't as big a part of her life as it is for me. If you don't know, like, Italians on Sundays, we typically like to get... I'm sure other groups do as well, but I'm Italian, that's all I know. So... You know, we like to get together on Sundays. Like, Sunday is a family day for us. And she didn't... That was not what she wanted. And, you know, at first I was like, yeah, I could probably do all these things that you want. And I made that sacrifice, and it was toxic for my family life and for our relationship. Mm. And the more I tried to do one versus the other, ultimately sabotaged, I wouldn't be honest. And then it was a bad situation. Mm. I absolutely have done that. Have you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking like mine was when I was starting grad school, and I usually at that point I had a lot of friends that were getting married, starting families, but yeah. I wasn't ready to do that when I started my graduate program.
Okay.
And I was dating this girl at the time. We didn't have the titles.
What do you mean, like boyfriend, girlfriend?
Boyfriend, girlfriend. But we were dating. We were dating for like 2 years.
I mean, like nobody ever said, like, you know, I mean, like we never kissed and there was no caressing, but, you know, we were basically married. All right, so go ahead.
And I remember like we had a lot of conflict. She was just like, you know, why can't we just move forward with this relationship in a serious manner? And I was like, because if I give you that commitment, my studies would suffer. And I don't know where this is going to lead me. And I don't want to lead you down the path because I don't know what our outcome is going to be based on where I'm going to end up in 2 years.
Right.
And I felt like I needed to prioritize certain things over her. And she didn't like to hear that. But we both ultimately knew that that was the right thing to do. Because in 2 years, if I had to move to San Francisco,
right,
she wouldn't be happy with, well, why did I waste 4 years of my life with you if we're not going to be together? Because I'm not moving to San Francisco.
Right.
Or, you know, just keeping up with the pace of my life too. So I think that we both understood. And I remember there was this one night in my car and we were holding hands. And she was just like, I guess this is as far as it goes. Like this hand holding, huh? I was like, yeah. And we kind of let go of each other's hands. And that was symbolic of our relationship ending. And we haven't really talked ever since that.
Really?
That was really emotional.
That sounds kind of emotional. Yeah, you're good for that. I'm glad that I'm most of my relationships end with yelling. Because yeah. Otherwise, I don't know that I could.
I'm going to try that next time.
What? Just yell?
Yeah, just create conflict.
I definitely recommend that. Yeah. Just, you know, when you get to that part at the end, just be like, and another thing! You know, yeah. Like, just, yeah, kind of fake it until you make it. The other aspect, now kind of deviating off the marriage part, the one thing that Leo said that really stuck with me in that last fight with his wife was that he says that he needs to win.
Hmm.
This whole episode, the whole hubris thing, it kind of is an example. It exemplifies something in my life. I think something that is frustrating about politics is when you focus on the result instead of either the process or the details. When you go so macro, you never look micro. Mm. And he's so concerned. They're all concerned with getting these 5 votes back. They are so concerned with getting these 5. Actually, maybe it's the reverse. You're so micro that you don't see the macro. Because they're so concerned about getting these 5 votes that you think as an audience member, this must be a big thing. This is the first time you're watching the episode. The episode opens with them finding out that they're 5 votes down. Okay, you're not really sure on what, but they're, you know, you find that it's about guns. You must think that this must be so important because they're all losing their shit over this.
Right.
And by the time the episode ends, you realize it wasn't even that big of a deal. What right. is it? How does Josh say this is effectively, it's like, you know, fighting tobacco by banning certain matchbook covers?
Yeah.
They're like, it's like, well, then what the hell are you doing?
Right.
And I think everything is exemplified in the one line, I need to win.
Hmm.
I just need to win. And it's happened to me, I can't even tell you how many times, where you're so focused on the wrong thing, you miss out on all. You go even going back to the Black Caucus. Mark, I can't remember his name.
Hmm.
He, you know, they're so focused on winning that you have a guy telling you in your face, You're not doing enough. I know because it's my constituents that are dying, which right. Leo points out, which is funny that it's his. But, you know, they just don't. And the fact that by the end, a win is a defeat. Forget about the Hoynes aspect and Hoynes getting credit. A win is a defeat. I mean, if that's not a perfect kind of, there's a one of my favorite bands is The Shins. There's a line in one of their songs, which is, never worked so long and hard to cement a failure. If that's not emblematic of that, I don't know what is. And I think that happens in politics a lot. I think that happens in life a lot. And I guess it's a learning experience. Usually stuff like that probably happens because of hubris, but I don't know. What's your take on that?
I think that, yeah, this happens all the time. I forget the expression. It's like when you're focused on the trees, you miss the forest.
Yeah, forest for the trees.
Right. Yeah. I don't even know where to start. Like, yeah, I've definitely experienced that.
Let me ask you. Like, you're watching this episode, and you're recognizing how seemingly important this is to them. No.
Yeah. Like. Well. Yeah. It's
CJ loses her mind when she finds out. Loses her mind. You know, everybody's like, "Who is this? Who's doing it? Who's doing it?"
Right.
And by the end, it's like, well, it doesn't even matter that we won.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the question is, how many times have you just not have you missed the big picture when you're so involved in something that's seemingly important, but it ends up not being what you thought it would be?
Doesn't that usually happen with work?
Oh yeah,
people like you know they're right. so focused on like oh I got to do this thing at the job, and they don't realize that either the job's like killing them or they hate right. it or
the sacrifices that we make as people, I think sometimes are misguided to what we truly want.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, and I think that, you know.
Well, why do we do that? Is it to give ourselves purpose? I mean, why would they focus so hard on this? Obviously, they've been working for this. So right. there's that obvious aspect of they've been working for it. They thought it was in the bag. Now it'll be an embarrassment if it doesn't. But if it's not a good bill to begin with, then what the hell does it matter?
I think it's a multifaceted issue, right? And people have different levels to them. Because even like with the ending of Leo's, well, the quote-unquote ending of Leo's marriage, that's really important to him too. And when he finds out that that's simultaneously happening, he does kind of shift. Because he...
What do you mean? What shift?
Like his need to win is kind of subsides ever so slightly because something just as important or...
I don't know that I almost wonder if it's just he realizes how defeated he is. He takes two body blows in a row.
Yeah.
First from the Black Caucus, then from his wife. He's got nothing left. I mean, literally has nothing left.
Right. But what I'm saying is that people are malleable. So you ask, why does this happen? And why do we put ourselves in these situations?
Yeah, why do we focus on the wrong things?
I think we're horrible at making decisions as people. And two, it's because...
That's if you believe in free will. We're not going to get into that. We're not going to get into that.
But I think that... I think that it has to do a lot with the situations you put yourself in, the people you surround yourself with.
You're saying it's environment, maybe.
I'm saying it's both individual in the environment, and
well, they are egging each other on. You're right about that. I mean, that's certainly true.
It's almost like that whole concept of groupthink.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how like when you're in the moment with people, kind of like. You know, innovative breakthrough ideas aren't allowed to happen because you're just surrounded by the same
right
things. And yeah, that kind of circumvents, that makes, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore, but like it's in my head.
Look, all I know is it's just such a bizarre thing. And not bizarre as in like it's done poorly, because this is very much true to life, that you have something that is so integral, important, is the basis for the episode, is the whole thing. And then by the end, you come to the realization that this thing you've been fighting for is really means nothing. I think it really has to make you look in the mirror and say to yourself, what do I fight for on a daily basis that really doesn't benefit me at all? But I fight for it so hard.
Do you think it has something to do with you always want we don't what you don't have?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Because I really don't know. I just think that, you know, we put a lot of meaning and purpose behind things that we do so that we feel better about ourselves. That's what I really think it is. And so you put meaning and purpose in, this thing that I'm doing today and that thing that I'm doing tomorrow and building towards this thing. And then once you finally get there, you realize, oh, I manufactured all of this purpose and meaning. And as it turns out, it doesn't. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, now maybe instead of focusing on the result of winning or gaining that thing, you should look at the finer stuff, the details, you know? I don't know. I mean, this is why I love this show. I don't know that everyone picks up on that about how like this was like the big thing and then it becomes like a nothing. But I think that's what people get disenfranchised with in terms of other people, politics, businesses, and they never see it in their own lives. And we do it all the time. I do it. And I think it's important to reflect on that.
A little micro example I'm thinking of right now is kind of how like we self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And like when we want to progress in our own lives, like all these self-help gurus talk about this, what we do is we create a situation that is we self-sabotage just so we could work through that situation again and feel better about ourselves. But in reality, because we took two steps back and one step forward, we actually made no progression.
Right.
And I think that's kind of might be what happening too. We kind of like coalesce around these issues that don't really have any meaning to resolve them somehow. And then that inevitably creates other issues that we have to work through. So it kind of like it's a quagmire of we're always trying to get ourselves out of a situation. And when we do, or what we do about it makes us feel good about ourselves, but it makes us also miss the other parts of.
Well, this is an irony because, and this, I actually like that you really brought that up because it makes me think about Christopher Wick. And if you don't remember who Christopher Wick is, he's the congressman that's like buddy bro with Josh. And I loathe him. And I certainly do empathize. I understand where he's coming from, but talk about not create again an irony, not creating meaning. Like he got to Congress, I guess because Josh got him elected helped or something. Him. I don't know. He did something for him, and you know sometimes you wonder how does stuff not get done in Congress. I think sometimes we forget that they're just people and they're just people like us and they have the same bullshit reasons for not doing things that we do. And this guy, he's upset because he doesn't get a lot of attention from the president. And when Josh says, you're a congressman, you got to make that real. It's like, you know, maybe that guy could use a little bit more of making some meaning in his life because he doesn't. And by the way, it's a really good, I mean, it's a cautionary tale in a way about like helping someone along when they don't deserve it because then they come back to bite you. Clearly he didn't earn where he was because if he did earn where he was, he would know that there's a responsibility in doing what he has to do.
And he would know how to get the credit that he wants.
Well, Right. Because he's certainly going to get it the wrong way.
I think that that's one of the most fundamental issues in society today is that and this is so cliche to say, but I see it all the time. When people want things, but they don't want to work for it. And they don't know the work that they have to put in to get it.
And take that even one step further. Not only that, then when they go to get more, they are going to look even poorer to others and perhaps not even realize it. So for example, with Christopher Wick, you don't think the president knows about you not signing or not voting yes? And that he's going to have to sit with brandy and some chess. You don't think the president's going to remember that? So yeah, you're getting what you want, but you don't. It's just, it's so, talk about naive. See, I don't think you're that kind of naive.
No.
But that's a stupidity, man.
Man,
I hate Christopher Wick. I hate that character.
I just don't like,
so
the character. Like, he portrays it really
and
well.
And I get it. And I really do empathize. But this is one of those situations where it's not every argument has two equal sides, okay? Because I'm all about the gray areas, you all know, and I know you are. And so you can look at Leo and Jenny and be like, okay, I get where she's coming from. I get where he's coming from. No one's wrong. I get where Chris Wick is coming from. He's 100% wrong. There's no defending him. There's none.
I was
because he's not even going to get what he wants.
Right.
The president's going to think he's a schmuck.
Again, and this is somebody creating a problem for themselves. Yes. So they can dig themselves out of a hole and they're back at square one.
Yeah.
He's going to be back at square one and he's going to be crawling back to, what's his name? Josh. For help. You know?
I don't even remember if we see Chris Wick anymore, but it's not surprising if we don't because he's such a... He's a shirt. What do they call it? Like an empty shirt? He's an empty shirt.
I was actually taken back by when Josh walked in the room and he was like, bro.
Well, there you go.
I was like, what?
And you even see
this
how
happens
like...
happens in Congress?
Because you feel like that. You feel like Josh is a bro. Josh feels like a bro. But when it's time to work, he works.
But he looks a little too old to be a bro.
Well, I mean, he was. I mean, like, you know, when he was in college, he was a bro, and now he's just a little bit older.
Yeah, but the other guy, his bro friend, looks so much younger
than him.
All right,
but look at, really? Well, that's probably because Josh has a receding hairline. But wait, look at Josh in that scene where he basically, like, busts up that one congressman. I don't remember his name.
I don't remember his name either. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about Josh.
Hammy and cocky, and this is why I don't like Josh the character,
right?
Because that's who he is. But that's not a judgment. It's perfect because that's exactly who that character is.
Right.
He is all of those things. Like you would never, even if the dialogue were the same for Toby would never speak to that guy in that way, turning around, putting on the sunglasses, walking away, you know, right. The band gazebo, the whole thing. He's so like, It's hubris. It's just so much that it's such a turnoff for me. Like, I hate it so much, but it's so perfect.
It's so good.
It's perfect for his character. It's perfect for the moment. It's perfect for the episode. And that's kind of like his bro-ishness to me kind of comes out in that way.
I actually liked that side of him.
You did like it? Oh, it's...
I liked to see him be that aggressive... Like, I'm going to get things done type of person.
Yeah, but it's done in the worst way. It's done with threats and it... I don't know. For me, my taste, I just don't like it.
I wonder if that's how things are really done in Congress. Like, we always look at these things and we're like, well, how did that happen?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think a lot of the decisions are political like that. And I think that's... It was just cool to see. And I want to pivot to the end when... As aggressive and as like cocky and hubratic Josh
hubratic,
is.
Hubratic? You didn't make a new one. All right.
Like the vice president just walks out and taps him on the shoulder and he goes, welcome to the NFL.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it kind of like he kind of ranked him. He was kind of like, yeah, you know, you're a hot shot, but look, I got to where I am because so am I and you better watch out.
Well, we haven't seen Hoynes really... We've seen Hoynes be a punching bag to this point.
Right.
Little jabs at the president, but nothing where you're like, oh, this guy's like a viable whatever.
Yeah.
This was a moment where you were like, oh, this guy knows how to play the game.
Right. It was good. It was just fun to see. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be good.
Do you still not like Hoynes?
I still don't like his character, but I like him in the show because I think that it's going to create some fun situations.
Yeah.
To me, in my eyes, he's still the villain. Like, he's still, like, I'm still on the president's
side. See, that's what's
side.
So interesting to me. It's like, I don't know, other than Chris Wick, I haven't met a villain yet. That guy's just such a schmuck. But I also like the way they had Hoynes and Leo kind of not reconcile, but again, Sorkin doesn't waste any time. Sorkin wastes, and he doesn't waste any scene. So you have the whole through line of Leo's hubris and everything that he does be the downfall of... Ultimately, the bill, but also his marriage. And now you know that he has to go to Hoynes. And Hoynes, you know, is not happy to see him when he first comes in. You can see it the way he's like, yeah, no, I know you're here or whatever it is that he says. But as soon as he sees that Leo's a little, you know, something's wrong, that whole thing comes down. So first of all, you see that Hoynes is actually a really nice guy
right, I did like,
at heart.
I like to see
and
that.
And you also see how... this is Leo's journey in this, and it's tied to this gun bill. And Hoynes takes full advantage, and it's pretty masterfully done, and it's a really nice scene. And then you find out that Leo's obviously, and Hoynes are both
struggling with alcoholism.
Yeah,
but I like that. I like to see, like, in the heat of the moment, when somebody that you're inevitably up against softens up and right. shows that they're actually a human being. To me, I love that, and I love that in life when you find somebody that's like that, like you're Newman, you know, to. You know, like,
Seinfeld reference, everyone.
You know, he's probably, you know, you could totally see Leo in his office going, Hoynes.
Is that your impression?
That's my impression.
That's a terrible name. Hoynes.
I don't know. But then, no, like, love them coming together. It just shows the human side of it. I love finding that.
And it's
that
done really well. You don't need a lot. You don't need for them to fight for 5 minutes before Leo breaks down. Right. You just need Hoynes. This is now artistically speaking. You just need Hoynes to be upset to see Leo. Right. And it happens. And you quickly go to... There's a lot of... You know, the artistry is, I think, sometimes lost on this. You know, I think about Leo and... When he gets the watch from his wife, this is something that I think a lot of people may not see, and you have to be, you know, you hear a lot of times about how actors making choices is what makes, a good role or this or that, or what makes a good actor. And I assume that it's John Spencer who plays Leo who did this choice, but, you know, he comes home and he sees the watch and he's like, what is this? And she says, it's a watch. And he says, for me. And she says, yes. And he says, for what? Now, he could have just said that completely dumbfounded. He could have just been like, what is this? It's a watch. For me? For you? For what? And then she says, you know, it's our anniversary. But the choice that he makes is to set himself up for a fantastic fall. Such a fantastic fall that we fall with him. He says, for what? With such love, such emotion, gratitude, joy. That for what is so loaded. Again, his voice, I think, drops an octave. And you don't realize that unless you understand that it can be played a different way. Hmm. And everyone in this cast is just great. And that's another moment of it. Hmm. He does it in the end when they ask him, how did it go? One of my biggest pet peeves is when an actor telegraphs that he's lying. One of my big, you see it in sitcoms all the time. You know, something really bad is going on and someone says, hey, how you doing? He's like, things are well. And then the other person has to, like, pretend that they didn't see that or something. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. He's asked, how did it go? He's, like, confused for a second, then quickly recovers and is like, nope, she ate it up. It was great. And it makes it more special for the audience because they're in on it with Leo.
Yeah,
everyone else doesn't know, but we know.
Oh, but how? And it makes it more painful for us.
It is, and it's because you know, and no one else does. Yeah.
And you can see just the excitement on everyone else's face.
Yeah,
like,
oh man, it's just Leo's trajectory in this. Where are we? How far are we?
We're good. We're about 3/4 of the way.
What is that, 45?
Yeah.
All right, because I also need to bring up Toby for a second.
Okay.
I am Toby. I'm Toby, okay? I don't know anything about the stock market. I love the fact that he's sitting there and he's trying to explain to this woman that not only would he not have understood if the guy was sitting there and telling him what to write, but even if, like... He was told, I don't know a thing. Do you know anything about the stock market?
Not that much. Nope.
Do you think you would know if, like, if you were told all the stuff that he was told?
No.
I have no idea. And I love the fact that in the beginning, he's going along with the president as the president is reading his speech. And he's like, take a beat. There you go. I've written things before, and I've had actors perform them, and I can just tell you, it is infuriating when they don't do it the way you wrote it. It is infuriating. It is just, ugh. It drives me nuts.
Have you ever had somebody who didn't play it the way that you envisioned, but actually ended up better?
Yes, yes. But when it's comedy, no.
What are you?
When
man?
Drama, what?
You could write comedy.
I can write comedy. Of course I can. I'm hysterical. What are you talking about? I'm also humble. Talking about your hubris. No, yes, because comedy is built on, comedy is math. It's a structure. You know, you need quote unquote timing, you know, and if someone is not working the timing right, then you doing your own thing and blah, 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 blah. It doesn't work. Drama, much more. There's this one girl, you know, I wrote this episode of a web series with this other guy, and this woman came in and she did the role and she was doing it not at all like I imagined. And it was so much better, so much better.
Mm.
But in that same series, I wrote a comedy and they couldn't get the timing if you gave them directions and a flashlight. it was impossible. It was so, I can't even tell you. So I realize now I am Toby Ziegler and I am a pain in the ass. Mm. So
yeah, we could all testify for
that. Ooh, zig at me.
So for those of you who don't know, which is probably everyone besides our families listening, Joe is a trained in acting and writing. So I'm not, and I love hearing every time he has these artistic snippets to show us. But Joe, would you say that you're more trained in dramatic writing or comedy?
I would say equal.
Equal?
Yeah.
What do you like doing more?
I don't have a preference.
Hmm. What do you do better when you act?
When I do better at comedy, I do better.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh. I would never take you for that.
Are you being serious?
Yeah,
or being
no,
stupid?
I think that you're just, I think that you're just more of a serious person. Like
I am.
I guess that's why you said the structure of a comedy need to be calculated. And I see Joe as a very calculated type of person.
Well, I mean, it's in, comedy is in drama. And drama is in comedy. They're not mutually exclusive. I mean, you know, some of the funniest things happen. I mean, okay. So this was a very depressing episode.
Mm.
But that scene with the president at the end when he's on drugs is hysterical.
Right.
So something like that, which is so comedic, can exist in the middle of this depressing thing going on in Leo's life. Mm. You know? So they're not all that mutually exclusive. I have to say, though, Martin Sheen is so good at playing drugged up. That was so... I lost it when he was... Toby. Toby's a nice name. He was so good. No, the whole rolling up of his sleeves, I couldn't. And everybody played off him so well.
Can you imagine just being in the room with the president like that? Like... Can you imagine our current administration?
All drugged up? That has to be.
That would be both. Hilarious.
And then Charlie coming in and is like, I left you alone for 2 minutes.
Yeah,
that was just, that was great. That was so great, I have to say. I don't know. What else do we got?
Let's talk about Charlie, this guy who was afraid to take the job last episode, and now he's bossing the president.
Now he's in charge.
I know, it's pretty awesome.
He's gonna get obviously a lot more. We heard a little bit about the first lady. She's gonna be coming in soon.
Mm.
There was that single shot in the beginning, which took up I don't know how long, 5-6 minutes without cutting.
Right.
Man, that
so the single
is
shot
hard.
Is when they don't do any of the cuts of the camera.
They don't cut. No, it's choreographed this whole way. I've only shot one of those before, and it was, I think, 6 minutes long. I don't know how long this was, but that was only with three people. Now, that did involve a car and a fight, so it had to be choreographed a little bit.
Okay.
But the amount of extras that were in the one in this episode in the beginning, my goodness.
Everything was so perfect with that first scene, I think.
Yeah. But all it takes is for someone to flub a line or fall down or the sound isn't right and the whole thing. I'd be curious to know how many takes they did of that. Because it can do two things. A single take can sometimes save you time. I forget. There's one famous single take in a film that saved somebody... Like they didn't have time. One of the biggest things that is that consumes time on set is breaking down the setup. Meaning, you know, if two people are talking and the camera is over, let's say you and I are talking as we are, mm-hmm. we're facing one another. The camera's over my shoulder. The lighting isn't on me. They have focused all the lighting to be on you so that it looks good. Same thing with audio. And mm-hmm. now they set up the camera. Now, when we shoot the scene, you get to say all your dialogue. They'll move in for a close-up, say your dialogue. They'll go to a medium dialogue. You know, master if they want to do it from this position, fine. Master is the big thing.
Right.
Then when they have to get my coverage, they have to flip everything around, and that takes sometimes hours.
Why don't hours. They just set up the same thing on the other side.
That's so because we in it's a that's a different style. It's not a multicam.
Oh, okay.
But when you're doing a single shot, you don't have to worry about any of that because you're getting everything at once. Hmm. But if you can't get it right, it could take forever.
Right.
And it's impressive when you get it right.
Hmm.
And in this particular episode, it's done really, really well.
Yeah, I agree. I liked it.
Yeah, it really is nice.
Hmm.
Wait, you know what I wanted to ask you? What's the best? Okay, so the other thing about this episode was the GIFs, and that was hysterical. And I have to know, is there a GIF that you've gotten from someone that could win you that award? And or is there a terrible gift in your life? What's best and worst gift that you've ever gotten?
The best and worst gift I've ever gotten or given?
Both. Given, how would you know?
Oh, I know when I give bad gifts.
All right.
Do you know when you give a bad gift? Do you ever give a bad gift?
I'm sure I do. I've seen you give a bad gift. It was to... not me, but sort of me recently. Wait, so... No, I want to know what's like the strangest... Like Josh gets a smoking jacket, right?
Right.
What's a gift that could be like weird that got you, you know...
That I've gotten?
Yeah.
Gift card?
That's not going to win you a present. I mean, is that not going to win you an award?
So wait, what's... All right, set up the situation again.
I think it was in the episode how it was like the best gift valued under X number of dollars. I don't remember what it was. But it was like, you know, something eccentric and strange and weird. He got I think it was velour smoking jacket.
Right.
Have you ever gotten something strange like that?
No, not that
really?
I could think of.
I feel like you would be the king of getting strange things.
Hmm. I'm sure... And that's the thing, right? I'm sure I've given something like that.
Right.
But I just don't think it was that strange.
Right, right.
And when I leave the room, everyone's like, can you believe what this guy brought to the thing?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I've gotten some bad gifts. I remember I got... Do you remember who Christopher Lowell is?
No.
He was this like DIY, you know, he was terrible. He'd be like, take this cardboard and you can make it a table. And it was just like, you know, he put glitter on. It was Chris Kattan actually did a great spoof of him on Saturday Night Live back in the late 90s. But I like to do some DIY stuff. And this fucking girl in college got me his book for like my birthday or something. I literally threw it out as soon as I got it. And then my best friend who was there at the time for my housewarming, he fucking found that book and gave it to me again. That was funny. The first time was miserable. It's singularly the worst gift I've ever gotten. It was just so bad. It's literally like put glitter on a thing and now you have...
You know what some bad gifts I've probably gotten, which is horrible to say, but when someone thinks that it's very sentimental to give you something...
And it's not sentimental?
Because you don't think it was sentimental, but that person, it was their everything. And they're like, this means so much to me. I think that this means so
much
to
you got one of those?
That this means so much to our relationship.
What is it?
I don't want to say.
Ah!
Because that person probably...
That's not... That's what we're supposed to be doing with this. No, you have to say. You can't bring it up and then not say what it is.
Let's just say it has
no,
to do...
No! We're not going to let's just say. You're going to say what it is.
No, I can't. Because that person means a lot to me. But the context in which they gave it to me, it was just like, you could have... Thank you, but you could have did better. You could have did better. It had to do with...
All right, I'm going to... No, forget it. You're terrible at this. All right, because you're not even going to say. All right, so I'm also going to... This is one of those cheese ones that I thought was awesome at the time, and then I realized that it was off, that it's probably a bad gift. There's this girl who, throughout my entire life, not my entire life, my adult life, we crash into each other every 2-3 years. I haven't seen her actually in a few years, and it makes me sad. But when I first met her, she was married. Then when I met her again, she was moving to LA. Then when I saw her again, she was going back to Canada because she's Canadian. Now she's living in India. But one of the last, I know, Jesus. Listen, whatever. You know, I can pick them. But there was one, I gave her a boomerang.
A boomerang?
Yeah, because I thought it would bring her back to me. You get it?
Oh, like a boomerang.
I know. I know. At the time, I thought, like, this is such a great gift. And then it's just, yeah, you're laughing.
Yeah, oh my
that is goodness. Totally something you would
that
do.
That is totally something I would do, but oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, does she still have it? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Does she know how to throw a boomerang?
I don't think, I didn't give it to her to throw. I gave it to her to have her be brought back to me. And as you can see, she's not here.
Yeah, maybe
so. It does not work.
Maybe you should have taught her how to throw a boomerang.
Yeah, maybe I should have.
What? She's not from Australia. She's from Canada.
No, but that's the. It's a boomerang. What was I going to give her? A hockey puck that doesn't return.
Give her a beer.
Again, that doesn't return either.
Well, they say that you don't buy beers; you borrow them.
What?
Because beers make you pee. Forget it.
What?
I don't know. Oh, that has to do with it.
Don't listen, okay? Don't with my thing. You're not even going to say is your gift, and you're going to make the audience be like, oh, now I want to know what it is. Meanwhile, I'm here opening up and letting things in.
All right, you know what? I'll say it.
Yes!
So,
huzzah!
So, there's this person in my life who... I value in-depth conversations, and for those of you who know, I used to work at a restaurant my whole life. I've been working at restaurants since I was 13. So every night, like, I would never have time to spend with people. So we would always, after work, it'd be really late, spend time with a select few people who would put up with my crap and wait up for me at night, and we would go and talk. And for this one person, we would always take trips to the beach at night.
All right.
And
this already sounds made up.
And so especially in the summers, we used to go to the beach at night. We used to walk on the beach. Nothing romantic, but it was just like a nice place to, like, you know, vent, unwind, talk. But apparently this person thought, like, those were very sentimental moments with each other. And I remember for one of my gifts,
it's sand in a bottle.
She got me a jar full of sand.
Oh my God.
And she said that, you
it's
know...
no boomerang.
No, I know. But she... I remember her... You know, it was very adorable the way she did it. But it was just like, you know, all the sand in this jar represents all the tears that we've cried and conversations we've had. And
that actually is kind of nice, I have to say.
It is. But I don't know. Like, at the moment, like, when you get a gift like that... Now that I look back, I was like, wow, that was really thought out.
Right,
that was done
but
well.
Well, let me ask you this. How did you feel towards this person? Was it just a friend? Was it a very good friend?
It was a very, very good friend. But
I'm surprised that you didn't like that sand gift.
Now it's like, Jesus, I wish I could find somebody, anybody in the world that would do that for me.
Right.
But at the moment, it was like...
Ah, Joni Mitchell was right. Yeah. You don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Yeah.
They paved the beach and put up a parking lot. You can't go back to the beach, my friend.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder...
You can't go back to the beach.
Well, maybe I could bring...
Back to the Beach, by the way, is an amazing movie with Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello.
Anyway, I think next year for her birthday, I'm going to get her a...
Sand?
A water or something. I don't know.
You should make up... You should get water from that ocean.
I should, but then, you know, I'd have to, like, seal it in some way.
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah, it's called a jar.
Now that we're talking... All right.
All right.
It's called a jar. No, I think now talking about it, I do want to do something like that. And I wonder if I ever go back to that beach with her. Because I'm still friends with her. I'm still very good friends with her.
Right. Not after this.
Not after this. She's not listening to this episode. Yeah. I wonder if we could find that that again and recreate that dynamic we had. I don't think we ever can.
We should have her on this.
We should. We really should. That would be awesome.
All right, no, we're not. No, you just ruined it.
All right.
You were too excited about it.
Okay.
But
yeah, I'm going to try to do something with that. But you know, in the moment, like, I got the gift, I was like, oh, you got me sand? Like, what's your problem?
I think both of our things are better than the smoking jacket. Both our little stories there. I've gotten some, yeah. That's good.
Oh, I could go. I could go on. Me the superhero, and the jar had the superhero's imprint on it. It was just
oh
like,
my god! Your ego must be so inflated.
It was such a good gift.
I can't believe I didn't appreciate it at the time. Why hubris is your issue, because people call you a superhero, and you're like, yes, whatever. What is this sand that you give me? I spit on it.
But now I spend my time finding someone that could remotely create that feeling again.
Was she romantical? Were you guys romantical? That's not a word, but you know what I mean.
I like it though. Yeah. No, I mean we've explored it, but it never materialized into a relationship.
All right, I've been there.
Yeah.
Oh man, boy, have I been there. All right. We gotta stop. I can't keep.
We're going down that. But we're going down the rabbit hole, Joe.
Now I'm getting. Yeah, it really is. I'm like, I'm gonna take the blue pill. No, the red pill. I took the red pill. All right. That's it. 5 votes down. I can't do any more red pill stuff right now. Good. How you feel? Feel good?
I feel good.
Man, that episode was.
Well, I don't know if I feel good, but you know, after these types of episodes, as dramatic as they are. Like, I really, like, this was a good episode.
It was.
This was a really good episode.
You weren't taking a lot of notes. You were really invested.
I was like, you know what? I don't need notes for this. Yeah, like, this is my life.
Yeah. This is my life. That's a little sad.
I like to welcome y'all to the Eminem show, as Eminem would say.
All right, stop.
Cleaning out my closet.
Okay, I don't know that. That's okay. So, this is us. We're ending now episode 4, 5 votes down. Looking forward to it. We're going to get right into it and go back and watch the next episode, which I don't remember the name of at the moment.
Episode 6.
Next would be episode 5.
This is, yeah.
Yeah, not you're 6. Right. But yeah, so thank you guys. We'll be back very soon with the next episode. This is Joseph Amato saying goodbye.
AC out.
Stop with that!
This is Anthony Caputo. See you guys.
Ugh.